If you're haunted and harassed by your own inner critic, if you've ever been curious about why hypnosis works so well, if you're a seasoned hypnotist, or if you suspect that the inner critic is actually hypnotizing you to hold back from reaching the greatness that you know deep down is inside you, lean in and get inspired to get out of your comfort zone and create your one precious life with purpose and intention. If you like this show, you'll love my powerful hypnosis audio, The Answer Room, because it gives you crystal clear guidance and direction and illuminates an ingenious way to make triumphant decisions, no matter how stuck you feel or how confused you were. This powerful hypnosis audio is my gift to you when you go to theimpostermonster.com. Again, that's theimpostermonster.com. Don't forget the. Theimpostermonster.com. And yes, I'm done saying it. Thank you. Thank you from the bottom of my heart for listening. I'm Lori Hammond, and I'm truly grateful for you. Welcome, everyone. I am so excited to welcome my friend, Barry Cohen Butt. He and I met a few months ago when he offered to do a Strengths Finders consultation with me, and I absolutely fell in love with his process. I really wanted to bring him on today because I think you will get massive value from this conversation and have tons of aha moments. Barry is a Gallup Strengths certified coach. He's a certified professional coach, trainer, keynote speaker, vlogger, certified clinical hypnotist, and the co-author of an upcoming book that I am so excited about called Your Talent DNA. Based in Toronto, Canada, Barry has clients in 5 countries and 3 continents. Barry has a gift for helping people uncover their unique strengths so they can build unshakable self-confidence. Barry, thank you so much for being here today.
Well, thanks for inviting me. I am delighted to be here.
I want everyone to just kind of understand our history. So I did a 3-day video challenge a few months back and you joined in on that. And I was actually a little bit intimidated to have you there because I know you have a background in acting. You have this great setup. You understand the camera angles and the lighting. And it was just so cool to watch you emulate excellence with your videos. And then you offered to do a consultation for people who had taken the Clifton Strengths Finders. Am I saying that correctly?
It used to be called the Strengths Finder Assessment, Strength Finder 2.0. And then a few years ago, they changed the name to Clifton Strengths Assessment.
Okay.
I'll explain why.
Okay. Well, I learned so much from that, so much about myself. And then in the consultation that followed, it was like you unlocked this roadmap for me that helped me get so much clarity about my strengths and the reason it's so important to know those. So if you would just tell us a little bit about yourself, what brought you to where you are today, and then talk about what you love doing the most.
Well, I have a very circuitous route to where I am today. My background is about 30 years in advertising, corporate communications, public relations. As you may know, I call myself a serial entrepreneur. I've done a number of different things, not always successful, but I've had a number of network marketing companies. I've had a video production company, and I've also even owned a limousine business at one time in my life. But it all brought me back to a few years ago when I became a Gallup certified strengths coach. And I had a desire to do more, to add more tools in my toolbox. So I ended up studying clinical hypnotism, hypnosis, and I went to study it at the University of Toronto. And I also studied after that with Mike Mandel. I know he's your mentor as well.
Yes.
And I've also studied by reading and listening to lots of Freddie Jackman. So I'm a big fan of Freddie Jackman as well, as you know. So that's what brought me to there. Now, it's interesting. I don't think of myself per se as a hypnotist. I think of myself as a coach consultant. And the reason I say that is because hypnosis is one of the tools I have. Hypnosis, mindscaping, other things. It's a tool in my toolbox. And I jokingly say, no offense to our listeners and viewers who are hypnotists, I don't think of myself as a hypnotist because I don't think of myself as a hammerist. I think of myself as a carpenter, and my hammer is just a tool. It's in my toolbox. So if I need it, I'll pull it out. So I have done sessions with people where I've been coaching them on their strengths, and then they've had a block. So I've pulled out and done the Mindscape or done a hypnosis session just to help them break through. So it's just another tool that I use. So I'm delighted to have all those things. That's what brings me to where I am today. I will say that in my last corporate job a few years ago, I learned about the Clifton Strength Assessment. And I brought it to my workplace and put about 50 people through some sessions. I was self-taught essentially at that time. And they saw the value to the organization and sent me to be certified by Gallup, which is a very, very costly investment on their part, but I was happy they did it. And I jokingly said to people at my certification training, this is my company's my company's retirement gift to me. And I said, haha. Little did I know that 8 months later, they were going to restructure my department and my job was going to disappear. And so it was actually very, I didn't left this part out. What was actually interesting is when I left that job, they, as part of the outplacement, they kept paying me for a little while and benefits and things. They also offered retraining. I didn't really need it, but I took the opportunity to say, you know, in my head, I'm thinking, I always wanted to learn hypnosis. And I convinced them, I can't tell you how, to pay for my training to be certified as part of my outplacement. So that's where all this came together. And that's how I have all the tools I have today.
I love that. That is so fascinating. When you first learned the Clifton Strengths, mm-hmm. did you realize right away how valuable it was? Or when did you have that aha moment that let you know just how awesome this tool is?
The very first session I had. In fact, how I learned it was at my church. I was a lead in a couple of different ministries. And we were invited by our pastor to be trained in this as some sample training they were trying out in the church. And right away, we went for a whole day of a whole day workshop. And at the end of the workshop, I said to my wife, Elizabeth, I said, this is amazing for work. I'm going to take this to the work. We'll do a secular version for work. And that's what I did. And it was purely from that session that I discovered the value of it. And we saw the instant returns at work. We saw more engagement. We saw more levels of trust between people. We saw the drama, the temperature and drama reduce in the office. When people saw their own strengths, their own innate talents, we'll call them. I'll explain why they're called talents in a minute. When they discovered what they were, they saw their own value. And when people have to see their own value, they tend to look for the value in others. And they start, and they also realize, as you know, Lori, is that when you discover what your talents are, you also discover what it is that you maybe don't have, which is also good and also important to know. And when you know what you don't have, you tend to start looking for people that have what you don't have to sort of complete that circle, and you can be sort of more complete. I'll go on to say, and you've heard me say this before, is a myth out there. There's a myth out there that we are well-rounded and we should be well-rounded people, which isn't to say we shouldn't try everything we want to try and we're passionate about, but real success will elude us if we don't have a natural talent for it. So the idea is that once we know that we don't have to be well-rounded, that we are more like stars and that our talents are like the points of a star. And that's what makes us shine. I hate, it sounds corny, but it's true. And that when we work with other people, we complete that circle and we make powerful and well-rounded pairs and well-rounded work teams and well-rounded families and well-rounded organizations, well-rounded associations. And that's how we find that well-rounded notion, but not within individuals.
That's one of the coolest things that I got from you. I loved the way that you helped me step out of the idea of thinking like I needed to fix all of my weaknesses. For example, I'm not an incredible organizer. And so what I've done is start to find people in my life who can help me in that department. And a lot of it was based on some things you shared with me. Barry, will you tell everyone the story about how, so what I have in my notes is how weakness fixing prevents failure, but strengths building leads to success. And I specifically think about you telling the story about Rudy, the football player. So I wonder if you could share that with us.
Yeah, all. For sure. So for those of you who don't know, and spoiler alert, if you're going to watch the movie Rudy, pause, fast forward about 30 seconds to a minute. So the movie Rudy is about a guy named Daniel Rüdiger, known affectionately as Rudy. Rudy was a guy who really wanted to play football very badly, and especially he wanted to play for Notre Dame. But the reality was for Rudy, Rudy was about, he was about 5'8" and about 165 pounds, not your real linebacker kind of guy. But through a number of different, his desire and his drive, he found himself in the school, and he got on the practice roster of the football team. And he got knocked around by all the big guys, and but he kept sticking with it, and he stuck with it, and he persevered. And he earned the respect of his teammates. And in the final play of the final game of the, well, actually the final two plays of the game, in the final game of the year, the players convinced the coach to put Rudy in as a reward for being such a you know, have such big heart. And they put him in, and he was there for two snaps of the ball. And the second snap, he sacked the quarterback, and they carried him off the field on their shoulders, chanting "Rudy, Rudy, Rudy." Hugely inspiring story, of course, which why it was a very popular film. Here's the truth about Rudy. Rudy, because he didn't have a natural talent, I'll say talents in air quotes, for football, he only ever played in two plays in his entire career, in one game. He never played another game again. So let's flip that movie script for a second. Let's say that Rudy, maybe he had this ideas of positivity and perseverance and hard work and all those kind of things, but what if he also had a talent, a natural talent for inspiring others, a talent that he could leverage into leadership? What if instead of putting all his effort into becoming a great football player, he put all his effort into becoming a great leader and a great football coach? Then he might have been a Hall of Fame coach. So this is the idea of you take what you naturally have and you apply. If you take your natural talents, which is your natural way of thinking, feeling, and behaving, and you apply to that your skill, knowledge, experience, and desire for something, and those will help you grow exponentially in the areas that you're already talented in. So give me another example. It's true, like weakness fixing will diminish with some training, but strengths building will help you grow exponentially. So desire isn't enough. We're taught for a long time, or for most of our lives, that if you want something bad enough, you can have it. And it is true, but let's imagine people who were on American Idol. We see them all the time. The ones that I want it so bad. I want to be a singer so bad, but they don't have a talent for it. And they could train and they could train, but the best they'll ever become is maybe a really good karaoke singer. I have a very close friend of ours who is an amazing, amazing professional singer. If she had a natural talent to be a singer, but never trained, it would only have ever have been potential. But you couldn't take somebody without potential and give them training and make them a singer. So, and I don't say it to be discouraging to people. I'd rather say it to encourage people rather to find out what they're naturally good at and focus their attention on that. Let me give an example. There was a survey that was done. I'm just trying to find, I have my notes here because I just want to make sure I get this all right. There was a survey that was done by Gallup in 2001. And they said to people, they asked a very simple question. They said to them, which do you think will help you be most successful in life? Building on your strengths or fixing your weaknesses? In 2001, 41% of people in the US would bet their career, their success, their satisfaction, their contribution on leveraging their strengths. Well, 59% would focus on their weakness. In Canada, it was 38%, 38% in the UK, and dropped down to 24% in Japan and China, meaning that 76% of people thought to be successful had to focus on their weaknesses. Mm-hmm. They did that survey again 10 years later to see how the numbers would change. And in spite of all these things changing, HR systems, training, advances in personal development, they asked the same question. The results came back, 41% in the US would focus on their strengths, 38% in Canada, 38% in the UK, and 24% in China and Japan. So we've grown up in this remedial world, this idea that we have to fix ourselves, that there's something wrong with us. In fact, there's another study they did where they went to parents and they said, what if your child came home from school and the report card said, say, for example, they have an A in English, they got a B plus in geography, they got a A minus in history, and they got a C plus in mathematics. What are you going to focus on? 70% of parents said, well, I'd focus on the math because they're not good at it. But imagine if instead of that, because what's the reality is, if there's all other factors out the window, like the proper teaching and all that kind of stuff, if the child just doesn't have an aptitude for math, all you're going to do is make them moderately better. But if imagine took that same energy, that same focus, and put it into the English, the history, the geography, they're going to get exponentially better at that because that's what they're naturally good at already.
Mm-hmm. Barry, what advice would you give a parent with a child, maybe elementary age or middle school, high school? I know these are all called different things in different parts of the world, but you're a dad. If you were a dad and you saw your child struggling in math and you knew that school system has, you know, gives people stars based on those grades, mm-hmm. and you knew that that's not what really matters when it, you know, long-term, how would you tell a parent to deal with that? Or what action steps could they take to mitigate that child feeling like a failure?
It's a great question. And so what I do, and I didn't do it before, as you know, I'm a parent and step parent to a lot of kids. Should we say the number?
Yeah, let's say the number.
12. So I'm a parent, step parent to 12 kids. And four granddaughters. So my kids range in age from 12 to 38. So I got a big range in kids.
So you know what you're talking about.
The older ones didn't get the benefit of my current knowledge, but the younger ones did. And so what I say to my daughter, who does have things she's good at and things she's not so great at. I'm gonna give you another example about that in a second. What I say to her is, I don't care what the mark is. The mark doesn't matter to me. What matters to me is the effort you put into it. So if you put if you put the proper effort in, I see you're trying, that's what I'm going to reward you for the effort. But what I want to do is I need her to know, and this is the good message for everyone, there are things you need to be competent in. So I would say get them to the point of competence, but let go of the fact of trying to get them to excellence. So an example is I had a very long career in the corporate world. And at one point, I was managing multi-million-dollar budgets. Numbers is not my thing. In fact, I was never going to be an accountant or an actuary, but I had to become competent enough to manage these multi-million-dollar budgets. But I was able to let go of the fact that I knew I was never going to be that mathematician or that accountant and say, okay, as long as I'm competent, then I'm okay because I'm really good at other things. Right. So, yes.
I love that. Thank you. I'm putting you on the spot here so you can tell me no, or if you want to take a moment to find it. When you and I were working together, as we still are, you read a story about the rabbit. Mm. Do you have that story handy, or would you be willing to read that? Because I just think it's such a beautiful metaphor for I'll tell everyone real quick as you're looking for that. I homeschooled my kids until my oldest daughter went into high school. And so I've done a tremendous, this is totally off the topic of imposter syndrome and hypnosis, but it's I've done a lot of looking into how to help people thrive in the education system, and the purpose, the reason our education system exists, and some of those reasons are no longer in place. You know, a lot of our education system was founded on the idea of getting people ready for assembly line work. And now we need to teach kids how to think in a different way. So when you read this metaphor to me, it really resonated with me in helping a person be open to looking at new ways of thinking about education and what's really important as kids are going through school. So do you have that pulled up?
I have it pulled up. This is an adaption of a story that was written by Donald Clifton, the guy who they named the Clifton Strengths after. And he, it was from a book he wrote called Soar With Your Strengths. And this is called Let the Rabbits Run. So imagine there's a meadow, and in that meadow is a school for the animals that live there: ducks, fish, eagles, owls, squirrels, and rabbits. Of course, the grown-up animals wanted the best for their children, so they created a school with a curriculum they believed would make well-rounded animals, with running, swimming, tree climbing, jumping, and flying. On the first day of school, little rabbit combed his ears and he went off hopping very excitedly and confident about how much fun school was going to be. Things started off wonderfully. The first class of the day was running class. There he was a star. He ran to the top of the hill and back as fast as he could go, and oh, did it feel good, and it was easy. Teacher said, "Well, rabbit, you really have a talent for running. You have great muscles in your rear legs, and with some training, you'll even get more out of every hop." Well, rabbit said to himself, "I love school. I get to do what I like to do and get to learn to do it even better." And in tree climbing class, the trunk was set at a 30-degree angle, so all the animals had a chance. But even with that, it was still really hard, and little rabbit tried so hard that he hurt his leg. Well, next in jumping class, rabbit got along just fine. But as you can imagine, in flying class, he had a problem. So the teacher, seeing he was having trouble, decided rabbit belonged in remedial flying. In remedial flying class, rabbit was told he had to practice by jumping off a cliff. They told him if he just worked hard enough, he could succeed. Well, rabbit suddenly had a tummy ache, and so he was excused, well, for today anyway. The next morning, unbeknownst to rabbit, there was swimming class. Teacher said, "Today, we jump in the water." "Wait, what?" rabbit said. "We don't like to swim." "Rabbits don't like to swim," said rabbit. Teacher said, "Don't worry, rabbit. You may not like it now, but 5 years from now, you'll know it was a good thing for you." Well, he said, "Well, rabbits don't like to get wet. I want to drop this course." Teacher said, "You can't drop it. The drop and add period's over. So at this point, you have a choice. Either you jump in or I have to fail you." Seeing he had no real option, rabbit jumped in. Well, of course, he panicked. And he went down once and he went down twice. Teacher saw he was in trouble and he quickly pulled him out. Well, the other animals never seen anything quite as funny as this wet rabbit, who looked more like a rat without a tail. And so they chirped and they jumped and they barked and they laughed at rabbit. He was more humiliated than he'd ever been in his whole life. And he wanted desperately just to go home, so he was quite glad when the day was finally over. Off he went, sure that his parents would understand and help him. And when he arrived, he said to his parents, "I don't really like school. I just want to be free." Well, they said, if rabbits are going to get ahead, they have to get a diploma, they replied, seeing he was upset, but still wanting to do the right thing. And rabbit said, "I don't want a diploma." And the parents said, "Well, we're sorry, little rabbit. You're going to get a diploma whether you want one or not. It's for your own good." Well, he argued some more, and finally his parents told rabbit to go and get ready for bed. The next morning, rabbit headed off to school, this time with a slow hop. Then he remembered that the school principal had said anytime he had a problem to remember that the school counselor's door is always open. So when he arrived at school, he went straight to the counselor's office, hopped in the chair by the counselor and said, "I don't like school." And the counselor said, "Tell me about that." And rabbit did. And the counselor said, "Rabbit, I hear you. I hear you saying you don't like school because you don't like swimming. You're not very good at it. Is that right?" And rabbit slowly nodded. He said, "Okay, rabbit, I know just what you need to do. Since you're doing so fine in running class, I don't think you need to work on running. You need to work on swimming. I'll arrange it so you don't have to run anymore. You can have 2 classes of swimming instead." Well, when rabbit heard that, he almost fainted. Well, then rabbit hopped out of the counselor's office feeling pretty defeated with his head hanging down. And this just then he ran into the school guidance counselor, wise Mr. Owl, and he poured out his heart. Well, Mr. Owl listened carefully, and he cocked his head, and he said, "You know, rabbit, life doesn't have to be this way. we could have schools and businesses and churches where people are allowed and even encouraged to concentrate on what they naturally do well. That way, they'll get even better at it because that's who they were meant to be. Well, Rabbit was inspired. He thought when he graduated, he'd find out where the rabbits could do nothing but run like the wind. The squirrels would quickly scurry up trees. The eagles would soar to the highest heights and the fish would swim deep and far. And as he disappeared into the meadow, he softly sighed to himself and he said, oh, what a heavenly place that will be.
Thank you, Barry. I love that story so much. You have such a gift for storytelling.
Well, all credit to Don Clifton, but it is a great story and a great metaphor for what it is like for a lot of people, you know. And I think there's a fellow who was a co-author of one of the original books with Don Clifton. His name is Marcus Buckingham. I'm a fan of Buckingham, and he had something he said too. It was really good. I wrote it down because I always mess it up. But he said, you know, we live in a remedial world where we focus on our weaknesses and we take our strengths for granted. He said, we've been told if we want to get good, we should study bad and invert it. Hmm. He said, but that's just plain wrong. Mm-hmm. When you study bad and invert it, you don't get good. You get not bad. And that's a whole lot different than good or great.
And this reminds me of what so many people who are listening that are hypnotists are aware of, which is when we can get our client to stop talking about what they don't want and start focusing on what they want to have instead, that's where all the transformation comes into play. And I think it's so true in this context. And I know just in working with you and you, because I tend to be a little bit on the perfectionistic side and wanting to fix all of the things that are not perfect with me. And when you helped me start focusing on what I'm naturally talented at, I think that's the word you use is talents. It gave me such a sense, it helped me step into a new sense of confidence and realizing that I don't have to be good at all of it. It's okay to let some things go and find other people who can complement those. Can you talk a little bit about some of the success stories you've seen, or maybe even the successes you've seen in your own life by helping people discover and then strengthen their talents?
Sure. A favorite story of mine, and it's sort of sad and sweet and sad, but the sweet comes at the end. I was working with a group of people in Montreal. I was doing some workshops there. And there was an elderly woman who was part of the group. And the assessment, this Clifton Strength Assessment, is an online assessment tool. So she was struggling to get online. She's not really good with computers. And so I got on the phone with her and I was walking her through it. And she said to me, as I'm walking her through it, she said, what's this for again? And I said, it's to discover your talents. And she said, I have talents? She was probably in her mid 70s. And I thought, did she grow up and spend her whole life thinking she had no talent? And so we went and did about a 3-hour introductory workshop. And she came up on the break and she was bouncing off the walls. And she said, you know what? I said, what? She goes, I have talents.
Aww.
And I said, you do. And she started talking about them. And she started realizing that she had taken them for granted. Right? She said, you know, I'm really positive person. It's one of the 34 talent themes that the assessment uncovers. And we'll talk about that in a second. But positivity was near the top. She said, I'm really good at keeping people enthused. And, you know, when I'm in a meeting or with my family, my friends, I boost them up and keep them encouraged. And I said, it's a talent. And not everybody has it. Now I can appreciate that because I have it. My number one talent theme is positivity. And I always say that I can't look at this glass and say it's half empty. I can only see it as half full. It's just the way my brain is wired to look at it. So it's important to understand this is how we are wired. What our talents are, which are talents is the term that the Gallup uses or Don Clifton used to describe these positive personality attributes that we all have. I should tell you that this didn't get pulled out of thin air either. I should describe where this actually came from. So Don Clifton, when he came out of the Second World War, he saw some pretty horrific things, obviously, and he decided he really wanted to focus on what's positive in the world. And he knew that in fact, he started off with a famous quote of his. He said, "What will happen when we think about what's right with people rather than focusing on what's wrong with them?" And so he spent a couple of years, and he went and interviewed 2 million people in 25 countries around the world to find out what it was that they had that were these positive personality attributes that created success in their life. And by the way, I'm gonna come back to some more success stories in a second. Get myself distracted by the whole idea. He came back and he cataloged thousands, literally thousands of these personality attributes. And after sitting with his research team, they kind of boiled it down to, I think, a core 180, because the others were sort of synonymous or not statistically relevant. To about 180 of these positive personality attributes. And then he decided then they took them and grouped them again into 34 themes of talent. These were attributes that were very similar. So for example, let's say a talent attribute or an attribute was you're really good at explaining things in a simple way to people, complex things in a simple way. Another talent might be you're really good at you're a really good speaker or a good storyteller, or you're a good writer. These are all different aspects of communication. So they group them up into these communication themes or communication talents and put them in this theme of communication. So there's actually 34 of these themes of talent that these 180 discrete attributes fall under. Now he called them talents because, and this is just where it came from. This is people can pick and choose what their faith traditions are. But if people who have a Christian persuasion may remember the parable of the talents, where a slave owner gave his slaves, not the typical slave owner we're thinking of, but they gave the slaves a talent, which was the unit of measure of silver at the time, and said, "Here, take this and do something with it." And one went out and invested it and came back and it grew tenfold. Another one came back and he did something else with it and increased it a bit. And the third buried it in the sand because he was afraid of losing it. And the whole idea was that Clifton was inspired by that idea. And so he chose to call these attributes talents based on that reason. So we still call them talents today. But you'll hear them called strengths, because it was called Strengths Finder. The assessment was called Strength Finder, because talent is the raw material. Talent is what you're born with or develop over time, but mostly born with, frankly. By the time you're in adolescence, you're pretty much who you are. But as I said earlier on, they're only raw material. They're only your wiring until you apply training, skill, knowledge, experience, and desire to them, they'll stay that raw material, not become strength. So strength is the goal. Take your raw material, who you are, and make it applicable, which is a strength. So to come back to your original question before I got on that diversion, there's somebody we know well. I'm sure he wouldn't mind me mentioning his name. Joey might be watching this at some point. I've worked with Joey. Lovely. Joey Joyful. Wonderful man.
Yes.
And when I asked Joey what he enjoyed about learning his talents, it was what we talked about earlier on. And he said he loved the idea that this allowed him to let go of what he wasn't and to lean into who he was. And for a lot of people, there's an affirmation that happens when you realize who you are and you embrace it. So for me personally, I can tell you that it was no surprise to me that when positivity as a talent theme came up as my number one. I think anybody who knows me would probably tell you that if they didn't, if you gave them a list of the 34 and said, pick the one that's number one for him, they'd probably say, positivity. But they'd probably also say, they wouldn't be surprised to see that consistency is my number 34. Now, consistency doesn't necessarily mean that I'm not consistent. It just means that I get bored easy. I like to have new things going on. I like new things. And so this is also important that when you discover your talents, that you also know that these talents are neutral. They're not positive or negative in themselves. It's only how you use them that makes them positive or negative. So in my case, there's nothing plus or positive or negative about consistency, whether I'm consistent or not consistent. But if it got in my way, then it becomes a problem. And so it helped me be aware of not following the newest shiny object. To be aware that that's my low consistency talent that's pushed up a little bit. And I got to say, okay, I need to do something with what I have to counteract that. So we're talking a lot here. I hope I'm not getting too complex here, but no, what I wanted to say is that when people do an assessment, and by the way, I will say in fairness, Clifton Strengths isn't the only assessment you can do. And I've worked with people with a lot of different assessment tools. And I'm open to other ones because people often do these things online and then they put them in their drawer. They go, oh, well, this is really cool. And put it in their drawer and never see it again, right? So you've got to take what you've given and use it. But the Clifton Strengths Assessment tool, when you do it, it gives you your talents in the order that they appear in terms of intensity for you. So everybody pretty much has all 34, but the highest intensity is where it starts at the top. And truthfully, you get to 34 and it's probably very, very minute what you have. So I don't know if you remember this story, Laurie, but because Gallup's a research organization and Gallup is the organization that manages the assessment and all the research around it. They've done more than 25 million assessments around the world in over 200 countries. Wow. And they keep all that data in an aggregate form, meaning no names attached. And they can slice and dice that information. So they can slice it by country, by gender, by age. And I can tell you that typically for women, the least occurring talent theme of the 34 is a talent theme called self-assurance. Now, as I said, as the father and stepfather of seven daughters and four granddaughters, that troubles me.
Yeah.
Right. But it also tells me that there's some nature nurture going on at the same time, as it's not all about nature. And people kind of, you know, groan when they hear that. And then I tell them, for men, which is usually the lowest for men, and which is discipline. And then all the women laugh. But it's the reality. It's also fascinating to me, and maybe to people watching, is that the most common, or not common, the most frequently seen talent theme around the world in the database of 25 million is in a talent theme called Achiever. And Achiever is a talent theme that is associated with being driven, you know, lots of energy to get stuff done. I think you have that, don't you?
I do.
Yeah. Your top five, which is your kind of dominant. But it's number one in most of the Western countries. If I go to Japan, the most common or most frequently seen talent theme is harmony. So there's some cultural elements to this as well, where if I go to Russia, let's say, I believe the most common or most typically seen theme is relator, which is that idea of wanting to know people well and deeply, which you also have, as I recall.
Yes, I do. That's my fifth, I believe.
So let's talk about this for a second, because I'm going to ask you a question.
Okay.
As we're recording this, you've gone through a challenging time with your apartment and the excess water. And while you don't have positivity in your top five, you've got futuristic as your number one talent theme. I raise that because sometimes talent themes can mimic each other. The fact that you have futuristic allows you to, as your brain is wired, to look to the future, right? Of what can be.
Yes.
Of what it will be, right? It's about potential. And so you can see how it mimics the sense of positivity or optimism is you can say, okay, here's where I am now, but I know where it's going to be. Do you find that to be true?
Absolutely. And I think that's what has got me past so many hard times. And I have insisted, even since early childhood and not having a super pleasant childhood, I insist on believing that in the future things can and very likely will get better. And for me going through this, so anyone who might not know what Barry is talking about, my apartment was flooded and everything in my apartment was destroyed. And we found ourselves homeless for a few days. And then fortunately, our apartment complex moved us to the fourth floor. We're dry and safe and furnitureless. But one thing that has really helped me through this, Barry, has been imagining going forward a year and looking back and realizing that this paved the way for new things. And I tell people, I want people really to understand, I don't think a higher power or a lower power did this to me. I don't think it's a test. I think sometimes we live in a chaotic world and crazy stuff happens. But I think that I have the ability to look at this and to choose my own adventure moving forward and to choose to find the beauty in it and to allow it to be a new start. And I do think that that is from that futuristic, like I always want to look ahead and know that it can get better.
Mm-hmm. See? It's true. It's true. And so it's the one of the really important things is the idea of self-awareness. And I think that a lot of us often take ourselves for granted. We get especially people in the field that we're in, the people listening, I'm sure most of you are in the world of helping others, and we tend to focus on others. But self-awareness is really, really key. And the reason I say that is what's interesting about the notion that it's so important is that Harvard Business Review did a study talking about the importance of self-awareness. And what they found was that only 10 to 15% of people actually are self-aware.
Wow.
And I'm going to paraphrase a guy named Peter Drucker. For those who are older folks who remember, Peter Drucker is a management guru, wrote a book called The Effective Executive back in the 70s and or even the 60s. And it's as relevant today as it was 60 years ago. And people still quote him. And he said that everyone has a unique set of talents or attributes. And he said, you know what? I'm going to get this wrong. Hang on. He said, basically what he said is we all have these. And he said, most people don't know what they are. And yet we can only perform from strength. So this way self-awareness is really important. You know, another point that I wanted to make, Lori, is that this is a real passion of mine. And what drew me to this a lot was the sense that of how unique we all really are. And, you know, kids are sort of this past generation of kids have been told they're special. And I think for many of these kids, they misinterpreted that sense of special as being better than somebody else. And I think when I talk about special, it's really about the idea of uniqueness, and we are unique. And as I'm very fond of saying to people, and I start most of my workshops by saying this, is that I can prove to you mathematically and statistically that there is no one who has ever lived, who is currently alive, or ever will live exactly like you. Now, that's not a bumper sticker. It's real and it's true. And I'll explain that to you. If we just used the the Clifton Strengths as an example for statistics and mathematics. I told you there's 34 different talent themes, and in a rank order for each person does the assessment. Remember, there's 25 million assessments done around the world. The odds of having the same top five out of 34 in any order, the odds of having the same as someone else in any order is 1 in 273,000.
Wow.
Hang on. The odds of having the same, just the top five out of 34, the same top five as somebody else in the exact same order is 1 in 33 million.
Wow.
So we're just talking top five.
Mm-hmm.
So people get your pencils out because I'm going to give you a number. There are National Geographic says there is 300 billion stars in the Milky Way galaxy. 300 billion stars. I get this in front of me. It is 3, 6, 9, 10, 11 zeros in 300 billion. 11 zeros. The odds of having the same 34 talent themes as somebody else in the same order is 1 in 10 to the power of 34. So 34 zeros. So three times the number of stars in the Milky Way galaxy is the odds of having the same 34 as somebody else or being the same as somebody else. So when I say you are unique, I can prove it to you, and it's so true. Not only that, I'm going even further and say this. Let's say out of the odds of 1 in 33 million, you had the same top five as somebody else in the same order, meaning, you know, in the same intensity. And let's say I gave you five ingredients for a soup. And I said, okay, put these in, and the most is the first one, the second most is the second one, and do it that way. Because we each have different amounts of that, even in the same order, you're gonna have a totally different flavored soup. And the important point is that what makes you uniquely you is the combination of those talents. It's the combination of how they're put together and what level of intensity that makes you specifically you. Now, I've worked with over 300 people, and I can tell you that the closest I've ever seen is 4 out of 5 in a random order. That's the closest I've ever seen out of 300 people.
Wow.
So there's actually a fellow I know in the UK who has a website that he created called Strengths Twins. And if people are interested who have done the assessment, they put their top five and give it to him, and he puts in a database, and every once in a while he checks on it. And so again, it's talking statistics, but I think he's found, I think 6 or 8 combinations of people in the past number of years that had the same, but we're talking 5 only.
Wow.
And just to belabor the point, remember I talked about 34. These were talent themes I mentioned earlier on. There's discrete talents in under those categories or themes of talent. So we're talking about 180 or more discrete talents in a combination. So you can't even, the math is like astronomical. We can't even imagine the numbers.
When I think about everything you're saying, and then I think about the story of the rabbit, and I think about this imposter monster that tends to really drive us to compare ourselves to one another. And I know I still play this game all the time. I'll see somebody, you know, I mentioned at the start of this interview that I've seen your videos, and I think, oh my goodness, Barry, why am I even making videos? Barry is so good at this. Or, you know, I see different people who have these different flavors and these different styles and ways of doing things. And I think one of the things that plays on our emotions so much is this idea that we're supposed to be like someone else, that we're supposed to do it the way they're doing it. And so I love the way this gives a person a freedom to step into their individuality and walk away from the comparison game.
100%. And it's because there is no one like you, and no one can do what you can do. You know, I often save this till the end of conversations, but I'm going to share it now because I think it's such a beautiful quote. There's a gentleman by the name of Dr. Benjamin Mays, Dr. Benjamin Mays was an American Baptist minister and a civil rights leader. He's credited with laying the intellectual foundations of the civil rights movement, and he was a mentor to Martin Luther King. Mm-hmm. And he had a beautiful quote that I just love. And he said, every man and woman is born into this world to do something unique and something distinctive. And if he or she does not do it, it will never be done.
I want everyone who's listening to this right now to listen. Will you say that again, Barry? And sure. If you're listening, close your eyes and take this in.
Every man and woman is born into the world to do something unique and something distinctive. And if he or she does not do it, it will never be done.
That's amazing. Just had a conversation with someone this morning who I felt that so strongly. And I know so many people listening who they have this seed planted inside and they know there's something they want to do. And I can see plain as day that they're meant to do it. It's like they're put on the earth to do this, but they're so afraid. And I feel that they're doing such a disservice to the world by not going out there and doing it, even if they're afraid, even if they don't feel they're ready.
It's so true. And I know most of the people who are watching us are helping others. That's what they've chosen to do, or they want to do, or they're hoping to do. How you do it, even though there's a number of hypnotists or therapists or coaches out there, or anyone else who does what you do, they don't do it just like you. Mm-hmm. It's that unique combination of those positive personality attributes that we'll call your secret sauce. That's your secret sauce of success. And no one will be the same hypnotist or therapist or coach or teacher or whatever it is that you choose to do like you. You are unique and distinctive. And when you find out what that is, as I said, and you lean into that, you can't help but be successful. And, you know, I used to say to my kids, I'm not sure they all listen, but I used to say to the kids, when they're trying to figure out what they wanted to do for a career. And I would say, after a few missteps on my own, I said to them, do what you love and the money will follow. If you do what you love, then you'll be good at it. And when you're good at something, people pay for when you're good at it. And so you can be good at anything. This is the other key thing, a key point here I want to make. These talents don't necessarily describe professions or jobs. You can be equally successful in whatever you choose to do in terms of a vocation or a profession if you be you. If you be authentically you, you will be successful. Because if you be you, you will do what you naturally do well, and life will be easier. You won't be swimming upstream. If you try and be somebody you're not, or something you're not, or try and develop attributes that you don't have, life is difficult. I once heard it described, if you live your life being your authentic self, leaning into who you naturally are and what you're naturally good at, it's like riding on a hill on your bicycle with the wind at your back.
What would you say to someone who feels like they don't know who they really are, who is searching for their true self? And I'm going to lead you a little bit. And if you want to go in a different direction, when we were off camera before we started this recording, you talked about a conversation you had with Deepak Chopra regarding method acting. And I wonder if that might tie in some way to being you.
Yeah, so the story goes, and it's my brush with fame. So as I was telling Lori earlier on, I had an opportunity to travel on a caravan of self-help gurus a number of years ago. I was traveling with Marianne Williamson, Deepak Chopra, and Wayne Dyer. And I'll tell you, Wayne Dyer, rest in peace, was an amazing guy with a crazy sense of humor, and had a chance to with a friend of mine who was an entrepreneur and a producer of these kind of shows, go meet with Dr. Dyer and a little coffee shop in a hotel in Syracuse, New York, to talk about him potentially coming on this tour with us. He's a character. He was a character. Anyway, so we were on this tour and we had a stop in Calgary, Alberta. And while we were there, we went up to dinner together, and it was a very small table, maybe eight of us around a round table in this great restaurant. And just so happened that beside me was Deepak Chopra. And we knew each other just casually from, you know, being on the tour and being on planes together and that kind of thing. And we got into a conversation together. And at the time, I was trying to become an actor. I was doing some bit parts in TV and film, mostly doing extra work or what they call featured background roles, where I wasn't in the crowd, but I was like the waiter coming, bringing the food to the table, didn't say anything, and did a lot of those character kind of roles. But I was studying acting, and I was studying method acting, which is that acting discipline where you try and what's the word? I want to recreate that emotion that I'm trying to portray in the role, but you make it real. You make it real. So if you're going to cry, you think of something sad, and you actually cry. You don't pretend to cry. So I was talking to Deepak Chopra about just stuff, and then we were talking about our kids, and he said that his daughter was studying acting in I think it was New York University or somewhere in New York. And I asked him what style she was learning, and he said method acting. And I said, "Oh, I got a question for you, because you talk about the mind-body connection, and we were hearing this all across the cities we went to, all his pitch about mind-body connection, and how when you think about or you worry about things, you will have the same physiological reaction because of the worry, the same hormones and enzymes will release in your body as if you really had this event happen that you're worried about." So I said to him, "Would it be the case that if you were a method actor and you brought up all these things, you'd have the same physiological reaction that you would if you were actually, you know, experiencing it for real?" And he said, "I never thought about that." And I was like, "Yes, I stumped Deepak Chopra." So that's my claim to fame, stumping Deepak Chopra over dinner one night. But it is true. It's about being real. It's about being real. And I say that one of the other great benefits people have told me that from learning what they're naturally good at, and I mentioned earlier, it's that sense of affirmation of who they are. It's a sense of acceptance of who they are. There's a real peace that comes from that.
Barry, do you think if a person... because I've had so many people say this to me, I don't know who I really am. I want to be my authentic self, or I feel like I'm not being my authentic self. And this is something I've thought a lot about, because before I started doing what I'm doing now, I was an incredibly insecure person who didn't make eye contact with people. I had a shameful, fear-based mentality. And learning hypnosis and learning this idea of changing our state, I watch method actors and I watch how they utilize these different emotions by using their imagination to step into the emotion. And I hear people like David Snyder talk about mirror neurons. And Todd Herman has a book called The Alter Ego Effect that talks about stepping into a persona. And so I'm thinking, like, I'm just putting this together as we're talking. If a person was to take this Strengths Finders test, I know I'm saying that wrong, this Clifton Strengths test, and unpack their top five strengths and find a way to utilize those, even if they don't feel like they're really good at those things, by essentially method acting and starting to just step into, you know, almost create a persona of who you want to be in the world and step into that. Instead of finding myself, I have become determined to create myself and create the most authentic version of myself, but to step up to the plate and say, what if I can achieve more than I used to think? What if I'm not that insecure, shy person who was afraid to make eye contact with people? What do you think about that?
So what I think is that people are who they are, and it's less about trying to become the person you want to be, and more about accepting the person you are. So for example, and that doesn't mean that like shyness is something that developed over time because of circumstance, right? That's not necessarily how you were wired to be shy. You probably weren't as a shy baby, but you know what I mean? You learn certain behaviors and certain attributes of your personality, but there are certain other things that are you. So what I would say is that the focus really, from my perspective, is to focus on that authentic person. So I'll give you another example. I had somebody who came to me when I was doing this corporately, and she came and she was kind of sheepish. And she said, you know, I don't really like my results of my assessment. And I said, why is that? She said, they're too granola. she said, they're not good corporate ones. Like they're not good in the office. And she, because her number one talent theme was empathy. And she just thought that how could that be of any use in an office? And about a month later, she stopped me in the hall and she said, the penny just dropped from me. She said, I was at a meeting and I walked into the meeting. We were going to pitch an idea we had, my colleague and I. I walked in and she said, without anybody saying a word, I picked up a vibe in the room that it wasn't the right time. Nobody said it. I could feel it. She said, and I reached under the table and I grabbed my colleague's arm and squeezed it. And what the message was, no. We made small talk. We talked about a couple other things and we left. And she said, I almost knew instinctively that if we pitched it, it would have failed. It wouldn't have been accepted. Maybe another time it might go. I heard a great line. Somebody said, there's no bad ideas, just bad timing. But she realized that it wasn't the right time. Somebody else without that natural talent of empathy, which is picking up the vibe of mm-hmm. people in a room as well, she might have failed. She said, now I see the value of it there. Now I see the value of it. Everything we each have has a value. It has a value. And it's about that acceptance, about that willingness to say, this is how I've been made. And I accept that. And I'm going to lean into that. Now, this is not to say that I also have a belief that's sort of similar to what you're saying. I believe that that there's a nature nurture aspect to who you are. And Gallup tells you it's probably 50-50. I personally think it's more 60-40 in terms of nurture. I used to say that your parents, imagine you are kids building blocks and your parents put those blocks together, right? The blocks are the blocks that you're given. And your parents and your teachers assemble those blocks a certain way. It doesn't mean that as an adult, you can't disassemble those blocks and reassemble them in the way that works better. They're still the same blocks, but you did the reassembly. So it's accepting, it's loving who you are and accepting what you're not. Mm-hmm.
Well, and I even heard you say earlier that understanding that your consistency, I think you said was number 34. And it sounded like you accepted that in a way that helped you just create some awareness that helped you perhaps make a little bit different decisions. And I would think becoming aware of those strengths would essentially tune the reticular activating system of your brain to start to recognize those strengths when they come into play and to start to congratulate yourself. I think I tell people you recreate what you celebrate. And for that woman, for her just to be able to celebrate, I did it. I knew that it was time to squeeze my colleague's arm and keep my mouth shut. Yep. It could help really cultivate and grow those skills.
Yeah, it's true, you know, and empathy is a great example of a talent theme. We talked about the another plus or minus or the another good or bad by themselves. I always say to people, in my humble opinion, empathy is one of those really, really cool talent themes because I say it's like a superpower. Other talent themes are how you behave. It's what you do. It's how you act. The empathy is you can't shut it off. It's there. And so here, I'll tell you an example. a former admin assistant I had came into my office one day knocked on the door. She came in. She said, "Can we talk?" I said, "Sure." She closed the door. And she said, she started off by saying, "My life is falling apart." And I said, "Oh, okay, have a seat." And she sat down and I said, "What's going on?" And she said, "Well, my brother has got, he's sick. He's got this bad diagnosis from the doctor. And my cousin, her husband is not being faithful, we don't think. And we got all this stuff." She named all these things that are going wrong. And I said, "Wow, that's really rough." And she goes, "Yeah." And I said, "Lori, you know what?" She goes, "What?" I said, "That's all somebody else. None of them are you." And I said, "This is your," she also had empathy number one, "this is your empathy talent over-calibrated." Mm. Right? So I used to say to people, your talents way to describe it is to say, let's say a piece of cake is a nice thing to have for dessert, but a whole cake at a sitting is probably too much of a good thing. So we want to make sure that what we have, all our good stuff that we have, all our good attributes are kept in check, kept in calibration. We talk about the having the shadow of the strength, because like a shadow, people see it, it's behind you. People see it before you see it. So for her, all of a sudden she's like, it was like a light bulb went off. She goes, "Yeah, I'm concerned about all those people, but that isn't me. It's not me. My life's not falling apart. They're all having challenges. And I've, like a sponge, taken it all in. And it's now me." So it's that, that's why I talked about earlier on why self-awareness is so vitally important. You have to know what it is. You have to know how it shows up. You have to be aware of when it's a plus and when it's a negative for you.
Yeah.
It's so important to know.
Barry, when we had our first conversation, as you started coaching me with my strengths, you told me about a speed reading study. And I was so fascinated by that. Will you share that with us now?
Sure. So a while back, in Nebraska, they had the state education board or whatever it was. They wanted to study different methodologies for teaching speed reading. So they got about 6,000 grade 10 students, and they were going to each teach them different ways of, you know, speed reading. So they, to figure out where they began, they give them a baseline assessment. How many words a minute do you read, at what level of comprehension? And they kind of fell into two broad groups. The first group was average readers, and they were reading at about 80 words a minute. Then you had, or 90 words a minute. You had a second group, broad group, that were sort of the gifted readers, and they were already reading at about 300 words a minute. So they taught them speed reading, and what they discovered in the study was that there was no difference between the different methodologies. So that was out the window. But what they were shocked by was something else that showed up unexpectedly, and that was that the readers that were average readers, after learning speed reading, they went up to about 300 or 150 words a minute. That's a good jump, 90 to 150, almost double speed, you know, the speed. The second group, that were the gifted readers at around 300 words a minute, their speed and comprehension went from 300 words a minute to 2,900 words a minute. This was a huge illustration of how you can apply yourself to something that you're moderately good at, and you're going to get mediocre or in a mediocre way better. Am I saying that correctly? You're going to get moderately better. But if you take something you're naturally good at and apply skill, knowledge, experience, and desire to that, you can become exponentially better at it. That's why it was a key thing.
I love that. Yeah, that was really eye-opening. Oh, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I like how you were talking too about the imposter monster, and you know, I got my own experience with that too, but I wanted to, and I'll talk about my own experience with it. But what I was, for the research for our book, we were looking at successful people and found out, you know, what are the fears that successful people have? We're not talking about everyday people. We're talking about people who are already successes in their business and their corporate careers, whatever they are. The number one fear was the fear of failure. But under that umbrella of the fear of failure, was basically three things. One was the fear of not having what it takes, the fear of not being good enough, and our favorite, the fear of being found out. And so until you and I met and heard it described as the imposter monster, I did have that myself, because, you know, it was that idea that I grew up thinking that, like all of us, I think, we have an ambition to get to a certain place. And we see somebody who's there already. And you have a presumption about who they are and what they know and what they can do. And then you get there and you realize, or you think, they must know everything, because that's how they got there. And then you finally get there and you see, I don't know it. And so you're thinking, people are going to find me out. People are going to find me out. That fear of being found out. And I had it for sure. Right? When I got to a certain level in the, senior management level, and I'm thinking, I don't know what I feel like I should know more. Like who gave me the keys to this corner office? I have no idea what I'm doing. What if they find out? They're going to get rid of me. And then if you actually talk to people who are in that office before you, they're going to tell you the same thing. They felt the same thing. So the message you give, Lori, which is such a great message, and people, you got to listen to this message. Don't wait till you're ready, because you'll never be ready.
Yeah.
You got to go now. And if you're focusing on, this is my message beyond this, the strength stuff, my message that I want to leave everybody, or have everybody take with them today, is if you focus on the value you bring, it's not about, and we're here to solve problems. If you focus on solving problems and the value that brings, that's everything. If you're in your business, the old model of business was you would go, you have some sugar, and you go to the door and you go, need sugar, need sugar, need sugar, as opposed to knock on the door and say, I have sugar, do you need it? Because you have the solution. And people don't know. You know, Lori talked about my videos and how she liked my videos. And I did about 50 of them in November and December of last year. And I watched them and I'm like, oh, you're speaking too fast. You're looking off camera. I got my own critique. And then I see people, I watched somebody from the group, the new group today. And I thought, this guy, he's a friend of ours, John Gill. John, man, he's a senior, and he's like learned hypnosis, and he's out there in front of the camera. And I know he's not comfortable, but he's doing it. And I'm like, man, you're awesome, John. You're doing such a great job. I gotta send him a message. I gotta tell him what a great job he's doing, because he's putting himself out there.
Yeah.
Now, if I can share a story, can I share my story about the firewalk, Laura?
Please do. Yeah.
So some time ago, I did some volunteer staffing at some events for Tony Robbins, for those who know who Tony Robbins is. I know he's a very polarizing guy, so don't judge me, but I will tell you that I did learn a lot from Tony in the day, back in the day. And so one of the experiences was, I used to travel around the US and Canada to live events and was a volunteer staff person. And one of my roles became to help out at firewalks. That was a feature of some of his weekend events. People would come out and they would walk across hot coals. So I was outside, it was 1,000 people inside this big hotel ballroom, and I'm being trained on how to do this thing. And they said to us, people are gonna, as you remember, because I've done a few firewalks myself now having been there, people get pumped up, they look up, and they boom, boom, get pumped up, and they go, and they walk across the hot coals looking up. And they said to us, if people suddenly stop in the middle of the firewalk, yank them off, because they're going to get burnt feet. If they keep on moving, they're going to be fine. But if they start veering off the path, off the fire, don't ease them back on. Because the goal is not to get from the beginning of the fire to the end of the fire. The goal is to take that first step. And as Tony used to always say, he'd say, there were a lot of things that we're afraid of. Starting a new business, new relationship, asking for that promotion, whatever it is that we're afraid of taking action on. He said, those things, those fears are a lot less real than 1,000 degrees Fahrenheit hot coals. And if you can make the decision to step on, then you can do anything. I would say that was a huge shift for me in my thinking, that don't be afraid to take that first step. And since that time, there's only been one thing that's happened that I've done that left me with that fear. Hypnosis. When I became a hypnotist, by the way, I haven't told you the story before, Lori. I first learned hypnosis when I was 16 years old. As you can see, I'm not a young man anymore, but so it's a long time ago, long before YouTube and Freddie Jaquin and Mike Mandel. Although Mike, and I've told Mike the story, I used to go see Mike when Mike was doing hypnosis shows as a comedy show. When I was in college, I used to go see him when he had his mullet and his long hair. He looks a little different. He looks more like me now than he did back then. Anyway, I learned from a book. I read a book and learned hypnosis. And I tried it on my girlfriend at the time. I was 16 years old. And she went into trance. And I thought she was faking it just to make me feel good. So we were in her parents' house, and her parents were very, very strict, and they're close by. And her parents used to always demand that the bedroom door was always open when we were in her room watching TV. And I said, go close the bedroom door. And she would, in a million years, would never do that. Like, because her parents would like freak out. She walked over and closed the door right away. I panicked. I thought, oh my gosh. And I was like, I took her to trance really fast. And I never put anybody in trance again until about 2 years ago. The sense of the power of hypnosis for positive change, the responsibility overwhelmed me as a young person. And I thought, I can't handle that. Now, I'm not trying to scare anybody away who's a new hypnotist, but what I'm saying, all I'm saying is this, is that there's when I started training again, some of those old fears bubbled back up. So I had to work on them. So what I'm trying to say to you and everybody watching is that let the fear be there. Because if it's a sense of responsibility, you want to do the right thing, that's a good fear to have. Yeah. If you want to have that sense of accountability, you're not going to do it wrong. We know you can't do it wrong. Yes, there's that reaction on odd occasions, but as long as you're aware and you're knowledgeable, then you're going to be fine. But that sometimes it's okay to have fear and just go out, take action anyway.
I love that. And I think that's so true. And I believe the only way, there might be other ways, but the only way I've seen to get past that fear is to do it afraid, just like you're saying, just to start before you're ready. And you will prove to yourself as you go along that this is a powerful way to change lives. And I think I'd like to believe that everyone listening to this show has a positive intention. I know when I work with clients, I do my best. My goal is to always work within their paradigm and give them the change that they seek. And yes, I might see something different, but I know they're coming to me because they trust me. And I honor and respect that trust so deeply that I think we do have a powerful way to affect change, positive change in people's lives.
It's true. And just that saying you had, that I think about all the time, to be honest, is that if you wait till you're ready, you're never gonna be ready. And so accept that you're as ready as you need to be. Mm-hmm. And step out onto that virtual hot coals.
Yeah.
By the way, like I said, I think I've done 6 or 7 hot coal walks and I've never had a blister. So it's there's something really powerful that happens.
Yeah.
And it's the power of the mind, it's the power of belief. And it's about leaning into your authentic self.
Yeah. Barry, I'm so grateful for this. I really wanted to, ever since our first meeting, in that video challenge that we're talking about, you offered to do a free consultation for people after they took the Clifton Strengths test. And I have just been blown away by the value. You went ahead and we've done the 5 sessions together. Well, we are waking our way through the 5 sessions as soon as my house stops flooding and I stop rescheduling with you. But the things that you have taught me are kind of always percolating below the surface for me. And it has opened my mind up to new possibilities of my business, a new level of self-love and self-respect and self-kindness that has just been one of the coolest gifts that I've ever received. And Every time I think I need to have Barry on the show. I need to share this message with more people. So will you just tell me, to anyone who's intrigued about what we've been discussing, what's the first step? And if they would like to work with you, how can we make that happen?
So here's what I'll say. What I want to offer up to anybody who's watching is that I will offer up to them what I offer up to the people in the video program. And that was that if anyone wants to explore what their strengths are, you can take the Clifton Strengths Assessment. There's a Gallup charges for that. To find out your top 5, it's like $19. It's not very expensive. To find out all 34, I believe it's around $48. But I'd actually encourage people, if they're interested, to do all 34, because it's nice to see, because really your top 10 are the ones that are really your dominant talents, not just your top 5. Your top 5 is your kind of your signature themes, the ones you lead most often with. So, but depending where your budget is or what you're interested in, either 5 or 34. So you do that. And then I'll share with Lori a link to be able to do that. And I'll offer up to anybody who wants to do that. Once you've done that assessment, I'll offer you a free of charge, a 30-minute consultation with me to go over your results and see what you can do with them. And then we'll see where you are and see if you want to if you're good with what you got, or if you want to work further with me. But there's no charge or obligation to work with me. The only charge is for the assessment itself.
And I'll put all those links in the show notes below. Just in case someone's listening in a place where they can't easily access the notes, where's the best place to send them, Barry?
Well, the website, our corporate website, is strengthsconsultingcanada.com. And there'll be, what I'll do is there won't be, the link will be hidden because it's only for you guys. So it'll be strengthsconsultingcanada/Lori. And then you'll find that page that'll be exclusively to you where to purchase the assessment and how to book some time with me to go over it. Again, no charge for that. That's a consultation with me.
And I would say, I would say act quickly, because I have a feeling that Barry might get flooded and say, my books are full. So if you understood the value of what Barry is offering, I say jump on this right away. It's just life changing, and you direct people to build this mission statement for themselves. It's almost like it feels like it just goes into the core of who a person is and helps them understand why they are on this earth and the change that they are going to affect in this world.
It's true. So thank you for bringing that up. So, if people do choose to work with me on an ongoing basis, I have a few different ways to do that. You can work with me. I'm going to create some small groups to make that easier for people if it's not cost effective to work with me one-on-one. But what I do is with people is I work them through the assessment results. We go through strategies which you're trying to work on yourself now. And ultimately, we get to the point where you're going to write a strength mission statement. And it seems daunting before you try it. But everybody who's worked with me has done it to great success. And the statement basically says is, this is who I am. This is my unique contribution. Basically, these are my talents. And by the way, we get past really quickly these Gallup terminologies, these themes, to find out what those discrete individual talents are for you underneath those themes. So you say, this is who I am. This is my unique contribution. This is what I'm going to do with it, for whom and why. We also go through a values assessment. It's really important I think the values is a key part of this too, because with the values, I did a values assessment myself recently using another tool that I have access to, an online values assessment. And what was really cool about that, Lori, we're going to do that coming up next time we get together. The values assessment is really neat because it basically, you rank the things you value, your values. And what I found was, yes, those were my values. That's how I would rank them. And I realized they were misordered. Okay. So for example, I had things like my faith, my family, you know, and my health wasn't in the top five of my values. I thought, how can I be a good parent? How can I be a good father? How can I be a good spouse? How can I be all these things if I'm not healthy? Just that one change for me, this is new to you. Did the values re-rank and put my health at the top? When that changed, I lost 20 pounds in the past 2 months. I now work out, my wife and I do a workout every morning, 7 days a week. For 30 minutes. I wouldn't even imagine that 20 pounds ago, to be honest. And I haven't felt as good as I do now physically for the past 10 years. So there was just that one change in realizing that even though those were the things I valued, when I realized that they were out of whack, I had to reorder them. Like the building blocks of your life. You can take those blocks and reorder them yourself, mm-hmm. and say, I have to make that a priority, not that.
Oh my gosh. I'm so excited for that.
No, it's really, really neat. And so that's good. So if you guys are interested as well, if you want to find me, I'm also on Facebook. I've combined my business and my personal page because it's who I am. I bring my authentic whole self to what I do. You'll see a picture of my our big crazy family. We call it the Core 22, which was it's actually Core 23 now. It's our family, the grandkids, and the significant others all together in front of the Christmas tree. Although it's 2 years ago, so we didn't get together this year. And there you'll find, the 50, 51, 52 videos I've created over the past little while, little 1-2 minute little words of wisdom, thought provoking things. You'll find those there as well. And you can certainly reach out to me through DM if you want that way as well. And I guess the final way to find me is you can always email me at Barry@strengthsconsultingcanada.com.
Barry@strengthsconsultingcanada.com.
Yep.
Okay.
It's a long name of company name.
Well, but I think if people are committed, they can make it through.
And I will say this, at some point or other, we have to change it to international, because even though we are based in Canada, as I said earlier on, our clients are all over the world now, and from far away as from Denver, Colorado, all the way to Wellington, New Zealand. So
that's incredible. And I know there's people all around the world listening to this as well. So I just want to acknowledge everyone who's listening and just tell you thank you from the bottom of my heart. I'm so grateful that you're here. Barry, in closing, if you were speaking to a person who is one of those people who's afraid of being found out, who's afraid that they're not really as cool as they're trying to make people think they are, or who just doesn't feel ready, what words of wisdom would you give them?
I would say, once you realize who you really are, who you authentically are, you accept that, you embrace that, you are all that you need to be, all you ever need to be. And if you do what you naturally do best, you'll be successful in whatever you choose to do.
I love that. Thank you for being here, Barry. And thank you for everyone who's listening. Have an amazing day, everyone.
Thanks, Lori. Thanks, everyone, for watching.
I'm so grateful you've listened all the way to the end. What is one tiny action step you'll take now based on an aha moment you got during the podcast? Maybe that life-changing action step is to come accept the gift I have for you at theimpostermonster.com. Head there right now to get your powerful hypnosis audio, The Answer Room, that lets you make important decisions and get crystal clear about your next step forward on this path of purpose in your one great and precious life.